On this episode of Ham Nation, we have a complete recap of Pacificon. Bob Heil is back again this week, and we're going to take a look at the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline and a whole lot more. So join us right now for Ham Nation.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 373 for October 24th, 2018. Pacificon Recap.
Hello, everybody. It's Bob Heil, and I made it back home. Wow, I can't believe it's only been a week since we've been out to the coast, but we're back here in the plant in Fairview Heights today, and I had to get in a different corner because my other corner got used. So here we are, and I'm sure glad that you've tuned in. We got a lot of information, especially about Pacificon and all the wonderful things we did and the meeting with Twit and so on. I'll give you a little bit of that in just a second. Let's see who all's here. Gordo, how are you doing? Everything okay? It was really good to be with you. It always is.
And it was great to see you and all of our team at Pacificon and chat room and all you viewers and listeners. You are so important for our podcast. And this weekend on Sunday, Bob, it is the Limarck Amateur Radio Hamfest Sunday, October 28th. Leviton Hall, Hicksville, New York. I've been there before, and they really do up a great ham fest. So, Limarck, make it happen this Sunday. Bob, back to you.
All righty. And we had a great meeting with Leo and Lisa, and words were very favorable about you, Don. I was surprised that they love you.
Me too.
They love you. And we'll talk about that later. Just wanted to let you know that they love you. So everything okay down there?
Yeah, everything's awesome. I haven't heard from Dr. T today, so we don't have any solar update for you. But just follow her on Twitter, and she'll bring you up to date. And, of course, want to say hello to all of our WTWW shortwave listeners at 5085 and 15.810. You know, they're playing oldies rock and roll now, and they've got some of the greatest jocks of the 60s and 70s from big stations like KHJ and the list is endless of some of these really serious disc jockeys. And what's cool about these old disc jockeys that are on there, well, they're not old. I mean, well, they're my age, but or maybe a little bit older, but they're classic rock and roll 60s and 70s jocks from huge stations around the country, and they're all hams. So they know of what they speak. And that's the cool thing about that. So you got to listen to WTWW because it's just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yes, Ted Randall has got it going on, that's for sure. And we're still doing our Saturday night theater organ concert at 8 o'clock Central. And good to see you at the front of the show here, Amanda. How are you doing? You okay?
We're doing good. Got sprayed by skunks last night, meaning the dogs did. But we have an excellent guest tonight. Really going to want to hear this one. This is Carl Martin, KG4HBN. He's the SEC of North Florida, and he's been in the panhandle organizing all of the amateur radio operators that have been supporting and helping out during Hurricane Michael. So don't miss that one.
Wow.
Plus,
wow,
I'll be taking your questions at the end of the show.
Yeah. That will be super. Well, I want to run through a couple of pictures before we get over to Gordo that I took last week. We got a really good video that Randy has later on. As you cross the Golden Gate Bridge, there's a picture you don't see often. There weren't many cars on. Usually that's packed. But across the Golden Gate,
And next we travel on up up the way, and look what we landed into. That's the Twit Studio. There's two or three different views, you know, the different programs you see, and really nice how they set that up. There is Victor. There's our chief in charge. Man, does he have it going on. I really love what he does. Good to see you, Victor, and spend some time. And behind him, were a lot of things. There's Alex. And whenever they have a cable problem or some kind of technical, it's Alex and John. John wasn't there, unfortunately, but we got to see Alex and spend some time. And they have a great team. There's Burke. You need a light changed. You need a camera moved. You need something soldered. There's your guy right there. And he's been with Leo and the team for a long time. It's good to see you, Burke. We need to do more, I guess. There's the audio mixer. And what's that up above him? That's Amanda. And this is the scene that Victor gets to see every night as he switches us all around.
There, I don't think that picture of Amanda is up. I think that's not during the show. I think that's up there all the time, isn't it?
All the time, yeah.
Buster girl. Exactly.
Yes, sure. Absolutely. Oh, golly. But it was nice to see that. And then Randy and I got to sit down and open the show. And, of course, we did it over with all the Collins 20V, the Collins mixer, and that wonderful, wonderful ICOM 7800 and all that gear. So we had a nice time there. And guess who popped in at last? Now, if you didn't see the show last week, you must go back. It's about the last 15 minutes. Leo popped in, and we had a lot of fun. And you want to go see the whole show, but the last 15 was kind of cool. And especially the opening. He did the opening. He grabbed a hold of the microphone and imitated Gary Owens, if you know who Gary Owens was. But anyway, we had a wonderful time there. And Pacificon was great. Now, you'll see the rest of Pacificon. I had some slides, but after I saw Randy's video, I'm going, you know, I don't want to bore you with a bunch of still things, so Randy will do that. So that's the story from Fairview Heights, Illinois. Let's go see what is down in Costa Mesa. Didn't we have fun at Pacificon? We always have fun, don't we?
Gary Owens there. Leo was great, and you bet. We had a fun time. Victor, let's go ahead and beam us up to Pacificon, the lead amateur radio show on the West Coast. And gosh, I've been going to Pacificon for many, many years, and you absolutely have got to do it at least once to see all that is happening with ham radio at Pacificon. They start out actually Thursday night with a nice dinner that we had, but Friday is the big antenna seminar. And as you can see, the room was full. Friday evening, they had the soldering station all set up, because remember, it was JOTA over the weekend, and the great team at the show made it happen in getting all these kids in their scouts uniform, really working with ham radio. And it's the Mount Diablo Amateur Radio Club that makes this Pacificon happen. And they had hundreds, I mean, over 100 volunteers over the three-day run, always there. The show opened up on Friday evening, all day Saturday, and a lot of Sunday. And it was quite a great show. Not only inside, but outside. And there was so much attention to emergency communications and JOTA and the field day responders that the local fire department turned out, Cal Fire, and they really showed off the very latest in technology. And, of course, Mount Diablo had all of their ATV going. That's the Loop Yagis. And, of course, that's the venerable KT-34, the HF antenna antenna by KLM. And wow, it really was ringing out the signals. And W1AW Portable 6 was on the air starting Friday all the way until Sunday at noon. And they had a log full of contacts. Well, we're going to let Randy show you the inside of the field day, or actually inside of the Pacificon, as well as field day operation that was going on in just a few moments. But inside, it was packed from Friday all the way through Sunday. Bob and I were absolutely delighted to hear all of the great comments about this podcast. And we had questions coming and coming and coming. And it was just a fun time for everyone. The Amateur Radio Emergency Service, we had from the ARRL headquarters, Mike Corey, talked all about the ARES, the new ARES. And we heard from other ARES officials about Tier 1. That's for rejoining if you're an ARES member, as I am. Tier 2, requiring some FEMA courses, which are lifetime, and you probably already have them, for those in the upper bracket. And Tier 3, that requires a lot of study, but that is your management level of volunteers. And believe me, Mike and his team are really going to make the new ARES happen. Oh, boy, it was tough working all of the great folks we met at the convention floor. It was packed. And, you know, this is something that I wish all conventions would do, and that is they had specific convention volunteers that would go around with a little cart like this and serve water and cold drinks and fluids and even some munchies. So I haven't seen that for years at a convention, and I applaud Pacificon for this great service to keep us going. Well, Saturday night, yahoo, we had one of the greatest talks, and we'll let Bob tell you a little bit about all of the excitement, but wow, it was absolutely terrific. Jerry Ellsworth, AI6TK, had everybody absolutely on the edge of their chair. Jerry and Amy were there in great shape and telling a story about how ham radio plays such an important part for getting jobs and working up the ladder to becoming owners and operators and hands-on to make electronics happen. Thank you, Jerry, for a great presentation. Plenty of laughs. Well, everybody, after the Jerry show, got to bed early because bright and early in the morning, the Marriott Hotel gave us a whole back parking lot. Let me tell you, this Marriott Hotel in San Ramon absolutely bent backwards, forwards, sideways to take care of any need of any ham. And as you know, hams have plenty of needs. They met the challenge. I cannot say enough about the great Marriott Hotel. But they let us set up all of our ham radio goodies to sell. And it was early. It was like 5 in the morning. Folks were out there with their headlamps, as you can see on the left. And the weather was perfect. No rain this year. And it was a great time to look for ham radio goodies. And we saw plenty of ham radio goodies. There he is, Randy. He was there getting great pictures early that morning. And Randy, we can't wait to see your shots. And this is Misa, the chairwoman, KJ6BUE, that every year has been pulling this great ham convention together. Misa, your staff and you really made it happen. And she says she's going to do it again next year. She may be wanting to sit back and enjoy more of the swap meet as she did this Sunday morning. But, Misa, thank you, and especially your full team. Well, I was told by Tracy and Jody, who Susie and I rode up with, WM6T, Tracy, Jody, WA6JL, that we were going to go to Jamestown and visit a nice hotel where they would allow us to set up and operate. So in my mind, I was thinking, well, they were going to operate portable. They needed no ground, no electricity, and, well, was this the hotel? No, this was in Jamestown, but to your left, the Jamestown
National Hotel, and that's Tracy, WM6TN Jody, WA6JL. Big smiles, because when we checked in, wow, it was a hotel to be seen back in the 1850s, totally restored. And Tracy was kept pointing to the upper floor, and he says, "You see that balcony? You see that balcony?" "Yeah, yeah, I see it, Tracy." Well, he was ready. That evening, Sunday evening, he set up the good old Alex Loop, a whole HF antenna system in a little tiny bag. And by the way, Alex was there at the convention. He should have seen Tracy. He was in high gear, Jody assisting, getting everything together. They did it on a white bedspread in case they missed any parts. But let me tell you, this thing went together so quickly. And that next morning, Tracy is on the air. He's got his little Elecraft, battery operated, using a BioWinno battery for backup to the batteries inside. There it is, the Alex Loop that you see with an ingenious mount that only Tracy Lineker could come up with. And he was busy making calls out there on the area. And very nice to say, in this old historic town of Jamestown in the 1850s, very little low noise. I mean, very low noise. Little noise. Then Tracy says, "You want to go on a train ride and operate ham radio train mobile?" Well, we didn't actually go anywhere on the train, but we did do a lot of operating. And wow, look at this. We went to the big Jamestown Museum of Great Locomotives. And this locomotive, if it looks familiar, that's the Tom Hanks Polar Express, plus about 27 other movies, all based on Number 3. So we were fascinated to meet up with this great technology back in the old days. All right, hang on to your pooches, Amanda, because after that, we head down south of Fresno to a place called the Cat House on the Kings. Well, only a couple hundred, three, how many, Susie? Four. 700 cats and 300 kittens on acres and acres of property right on the Kings River. And we were working with them to get their radio system set up. They've got FRS radios. They're using the Baofangs, and they wanted to make sure that they had the right ones after all the publicity we've been hearing about. Yep, they had the right ones, but needed a little help. So, you know, that's a neat thing about ham operators. We can go in there and help out all of the volunteers who are having a big weekend coming up just for the preservation and the adoption, we hope, of all these felines. 700, there are a bunch. And then afterwards, Tracy says, "Well, let's go stomp some grapes." Well, his family members are just about 5 or 10 minutes away. And here we are on the grapes and raisins. That's it, grapes and raisins. I never knew that grapes and raisins were the same until we took the tour and acres of these wonderful plants. And we learned all about irrigation, much like ham radio plumbing of coaxial cable. And after they pluck grapes or pick grapes or grab, I don't know what, but they put them down here to dry, and then they wrap them up and they shrivel and they end up from olives to grapes. No. So. Not olives, no.
Grapes to raisins.
Thank you, Suze. So we learned a lot, and that's a neat thing about ham radio is you can combine a business trip and then explore the outside. Well, finally, we go to Hanford, just very close after the Cat House. And Hanford is where the Acceler ice cream is made and distributed. And we just wanted a regular chocolate sundae and things like that. And the Hanford get-together was fun. That's Jody again, WA6JL, doing a little testing and deciding which one of these great desserts are there going to be consumed. And that's a Superior Dairy, and they do just a fabulous job. So any time that you head for a ham radio convention, we encourage you, as Susie and I did, to travel with friends that know the routes. We'll take you on a great surprise trip all over the mountains in the gold country. And play ham radio, and that we did the full time. So, Bob, that's our story on PacificCon, and that is a little bit of business for a couple of days. But, you know, the folks that we met were so great and so pleasant and so positive on all that we're doing here on Ham Nation. It was fun. Bob? And now here's Don. Hi, Don.
Hi, I was just perusing the new DX Engineering catalog. This is the brand new one, the Autumn and Winter 2018. It's out. It should have been in your mailbox already. If it's not, of course, you can go to dxengineering.com and find out about it. And the folks at DX Engineering are thrilled that this thing is out now. What they want you to do is, and literally, this is something easy to do, take an hour or two and just go through it and get your big red Sharpie and circle all the stuff you need to build your dream station, because it's all there. Radios, antennas, towers, amps, high-performance cables, tools, every accessory you could possibly want. 131 pages. It's the biggest and most extensive catalog to date, featuring more than, like I said, 130 pages. It's 131. I looked, and there are thousands of products from Ham Radio's most trusted brands in there, including DX Engineering's own lineup of gear. Like, new from DX Engineering, you'll find the RX Share audio switch for multi and single-op contesting, a wide selection of color-coded ferrite RF noise reduction kits, and the new short dipole NVIS antenna kit. What else is new? Well, Geochron's digital 4K UHD world clock, Sodabeam's wire antenna kits, the Stealth Loop antenna from Ciro Mazzoni, the Heil BM17 emergency communication headsets. You've seen that. George has had one of those on there, the little yellow one. New rigs from Kenwood and Yaesu. Let's see, man, what else? The latest DMR handheld from Elenco. And that's just a small sampling of the latest gear you'll find inside. And getting the catalog is extremely easy. Go to dxengineering.com. Click on the sign up for our free catalog link. You can also download a searchable PDF or view it digitally. And, of course, it's all free. And while you're shopping for ways to upgrade your shack, it's the perfect time to prepare for the ARRL November sweepstakes, your chance to display your skills and win awards by exchanging QSO information with as many U.S. and Canada stations as you possibly can on 160, 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10 meters. The CW portion of the contest is Saturday, November 3rd, 2100 UTC through Monday, November 5th at 0259 UTC, and the phone portion will be the weekend of November 17th to the 19th. Scores will be calculated from contacts logged during 24 hours of operation. Complete rules are right there on the ARRL's website. And DX Engineering carries a wide range of iambic, straight, single, and double paddles and hand keys, key or cables, dust covers, all the accessories you want from top brands. N3ZN, Vibraplex, Bencher, Kent, and HA8KF magnetic paddles. Ready for your next marathon contesting session? DX Engineering's paddle pads are a CW operator's best friend. They keep your key from walking all over your desk, and they allow your wrist to stay at a comfortable angle. And if your wrist isn't comfortable, you're not going to send good code. DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Most orders placed by 10 p.m. Eastern are shipped the same day. And with proven products and expert advice, DX Engineering is helping you shrink the globe. Request your catalog. Shop online 24/7 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. And if you like QSL cards, there's a really the cover of the new catalog has all these really, really cool DX QSL cards. And if you look on the inside, Tim Duffy always has a little thing talking about what's going on in the catalog. And he talks about some of the cool on the cover part down here at the bottom, some really, really cool QSL cards. So get on here and read this right here about all these really, really epic QSL cards that are from the operators there at DX Engineering that they've collected over the years. So really, really good stuff. Amanda, what's going on with you? What are you talking to us tonight about? You have a special guest, a special interview, don't you?
I kind of do, actually. We have Carl Martin joining us, KG4HBN, and he is special. This is the section emergency coordinator from the Northern Florida Panhandle. He's been working his hiney off. Not only him, but a lot of other ham radio operators as well. They've been supporting Hurricane Michael. And Carl, why don't you tell us kind of what you guys have been doing for the last 2 weeks?
Oh, we've been pretty busy. We've been having a lot of people deployed out there helping out during the disaster. We were hit pretty hard. They're talking about this being Michael being very close to Andrew when it hit back in the early 90s.
Okay, so in some of these places like Panama Beach and such, there was no comms. Am I correct? 0% cell coverage, no DTR for any public safety. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I don't have him, but some of the people that were down there deployed were talking about seeing cell phone towers completely chipped over. The shelters had no communications. Some of the EOCs had no communications to the state.
Okay, and let's talk about the EOCs there. The state EOC was activated, obviously, before the hurricane ever reached land. And I'm going to guess the other EOCs, county EOCs, did the same thing. But you guys needed comms with them. How'd that work? Did SARnet work for you guys, or did you end up having to use HF? What happened there?
From the beginning, the HF was the primary means of communication. SARnet, it was there in case we needed it. The repeater that was located close to the disaster area, I think it's just outside Bay County, had some issues. The generator that was powering it was brand new, and they had mechanical issues just afterwards. So it took a couple days till I got that back online. But after that, SARnet was very active.
Okay. And again, speaking about the EOCs, what kind of traffic were the operators handling? Were they just requests for supplies or injuries, or what was going on?
Most of it was requests for supplies. There really wasn't much injury traffic. It was the shelters had no communications to the EOCs. The EOCs themselves, after a few days, had communication with state, but they had no communication with shelters. The shelters managers, staff there were sending messages through amateur radio to the HF net, and then the HF net would send it up to state or the county, depending on where it needed to go.
Okay, and speaking of the HF net, who was running that? Was that being hosted at the state EOC, or was that just part of the hurricane watch net and people outside of the area were taking that traffic?
It was actually the net manager was not able to run the net. Him and his wife had to leave the area. They lived in the disaster area. But the Duval County EOC was pretty active in SARnet and on HF, and they were the ones helping out past traffic. The net manager that took over was very active as well. So the net manager between the SARnet and the HF net were talking to each other on a daily basis.
Wow. And how many shelters were you supporting?
That changed by the day, by the hour. Originally, it was only going to be, I think it was between 8 or 10. That list by day 3 had grown to about 30.
Wow. And the other thing, all of us outside of the area, we saw on the internet where you guys were calling for help outside all over the United States saying, please come help us as long as you have a background check and you can be self-sustaining. Did people answer the call? Did you get enough support and some good operators to help you out?
Yes, we did. I'm very happy to have them come in and help us. We had people from Mississippi, Alabama, North and South Carolina, and Georgia come in from those areas. A lot of the operators actually came from West Central Florida section and the South Florida sections of, we're North Florida. So there's three sections in our state.
Very good. And you had mentioned you've seen Hurricane Andrew, so this is not your first rodeo, I'm going to guess, with amateur radio. Did you help out during Andrew as well?
No, I didn't get licensed until 2001, but I've been active since then. And especially in the hurricanes in the last few years, I was emergency coordinator for Volusia County, our local area, through all three of this last 3 years. And then I only took over as section emergency coordinator just 2 months ago. So it was quite a start.
Wow. Welcome to your position. That is quite the start. One other thing I wanted to ask you is, what do you think was the most amazing thing you guys did in the last 2 weeks?
I think I spoke to one of the amateurs that was deployed there. He was there practically from the beginning. He was doing some work, some camera. He's a videographer, and he was doing work there. And he put down his camera to actually help during this emergency. So he was not making money during this whole event. But he was able to actually get a message out from one of the fire stations. One of the fire paramedics, I guess they're called, they had a health issue and they needed to be moved from the fire station with a helicopter to a hospital. They were actually, it's a life-threatening problem they were having there. And he let the chief use the HF radio to contact state and get the helicopter in there to get them moved out.
Wow, and I think you're referencing James Lee. Is that correct?
That's it, WX4TV.
Yeah, we're friends on Facebook, and he was posting some amazing things about just the destruction and devastation, really, and shelters with no power, and they were holding flashlights to make pancakes. I just, I can't imagine. I mean, where are you guys at now? How is it going? You just stood down on Monday, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. It's doing very well. What I've been getting from all the after-action reports from the people, they don't leave until they have solid communications of internet, because most of the shelters have IP phones. They have FEMA in the area usually before we leave, and they definitely have a strong cellular connection for 6 to 12 hours before we decide to actually leave the area.
Very good. And you sent us some pictures. So, Victor, why don't we just go ahead and breeze through those? And, Don also survived a Hurricane Katrina. Don, sometimes he likes to comment, sometimes not. Don, do you have any words about, as we go through these pictures, about your feelings on it?
I'll tell you what, I did my best to avoid a lot of the news coverage because, quite frankly, it gave me a flashback. PTSD surrounding these things is real. And, we've got a really, really good friend of the show, Charlie Wooten, NF4A, who's chief engineer for the Panama City iHeart Media and iHeart Radio stations, the same company that I work for. And, they lost a tower over there. So everybody has been just so, so busy. And for those of us over here in the New Orleans area who remember Katrina, and also we remember Andrew. In fact, we had a Young Ham of the Year from 1994 who won Young Ham of the Year because of something that he did when Andrew came through and hit the Louisiana area. So, our hearts go out to all of those guys in North Florida. And our prayers continue to go out.
Absolutely. The other question I had was, Carl, how many operators did it actually take to run this whole operation?
I'm actually still going through all the reports. I haven't got an exact number, but at this point, it's running around 40 operators. That counts shelters deployment, EOC deployment, and operators just acting as net controls or being on frequency to deliver and pass traffic.
Wow, that's amazing. That's a lot of response. And my other question was, it took a while. You guys were there before Red Cross actually showed up to some of these shelters. So you were kind of the first responders. That had to have been a little crazy, huh?
Yes. We sent people in groups. They would get there, stay there 3 to 5 days, and then we'd rotate them out because we can't have people in there for a week or 2 weeks at a time. So we got in there pretty quickly as possible. And with all the help that all the other areas gave us, we were able to do this.
Okay, and some of these pictures, it looks like I'm seeing some portable, maybe showers, and I see some sinks there. Was that brought in by FEMA?
Yes, they had portable showers, portable laundry mats. It was kind of surprising how what they could bring in as a portable trailer.
Right, and of course, we had Waffle House out there, too, bringing in their trailers. That was pretty nice. That would have been one of the better ones to see, I think, for sure. Well, Carl, I really appreciate all this. Is there anything else you wanted to tell us about your experience in the last 2 weeks? Anything you want our viewers to know?
It's just I'm just so happy that people were able to come out and help us out. We were in need. We didn't expect it to hit so hard. 3 days before, it was category 1. just a day before it was Category 3. It was just so quickly it evolved and got sped up. And it just so many hams turned out to help us out and really appreciate it.
This is why we train. This is why we exercise. And all of you out there, when you're going to respond to some of these situations, I think that Carl can 100% agree with me. Make sure you have your NIMS certifications done. Make sure you have all of that, those certs ready to show if you're going to deploy to one of these places, and never self-deploy. So, all right, Carl, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. And we really appreciate all the information, and you guys really worked hard, and thank you for all of your service. All of you and all of your operators did a terrific job. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yep. All right. I don't know who's taking it next. So, I'll just say
great interview, Amanda. Great interview, Amanda. I think we've got George with Smoke and Solder up next.
Okay.
And we do. And, yeah, you mentioned Charlie a moment ago. You know, he was just on Ham Nation here with us a week before talking about, you know, the efforts up in the Carolinas. And then he goes home and, you know, folks down in Florida get a really big one there. So I know there's got – a lot of recovery efforts still going on down there. So,
you know, Charlie was a big part of the Katrina relief for the Mississippi Gulf Coast when and New Orleans as well. So, yeah, man, Charlie Wooten's one of the best engineers I've ever worked with.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, Charlie actually built the studios that my stations are in now. He was with Clear Channel, and those stations were owned with Clear Channel back in that time, and he actually came up here and built them. So I'm still kind of shuffling through some of the wires that Charlie left there and other people have added on top of it. Well, a couple of things tonight. First off, I've got a photo here that I sent to Victor a little bit earlier. This is, it's what happened to me Monday morning, first thing. I headed off in one direction to a transmitter and got there and was doing some work at that one. And another one called me and it had a power failure. I checked the power on it over the remote control. It didn't come back on. When I got there, I found that, I had a bad tube in it. And there it is right there. That's a 4CX 15000A. That one's not but 3 months old. And it had a catastrophic failure. Some of the element in it shorted. I'm not sure which one because you can't measure it with an ohm meter. But sure enough, transmitter wouldn't come back up. It was getting overload. I didn't see anything else wrong. So I put my spare tube in there and got it back up. So I'm sending this one back to the rebuilder, and they're going to open it up and see what's wrong with it. In the meantime, I've got another one coming, so I'll have a fun project to do this weekend when it gets here. Randy, you know, was out with Bob and Gordo and everyone else at Pacificon, and he put together this little video for us tonight. Show us some of the highlights and the festivities going on there. So let's take a look at that.
I'm Kilo Juliet 6, Bravo Uniform Echo, and I'm the Pacificon Chair for 2018.
Great job they've done with this Ham Fest. So Matt Diablo personnel and all the volunteers, thank you. Yeah.
Look how much better this table is.
That's right. And everybody generally familiar with Ham Radio Deluxe then? Some people know.
And Phil here, what a thing began.
Test these things before you spend a lot of extra money on it.
And why? Because the human hearing system needs that 2.5K.
About that. So why are we talking about these whole things in the first place? Well, I think Ham Fests are underrated.
Receiver, let's see what happens. There's 75.
Yeah, controller plugged into your battery pack. That might
be a little bit. Thank you.
got to put these on.
We didn't put these on last time.
The first thing you do is you lay everything out on the table and line them up and find out what they all are, okay?
And never too old to learn how to saw.
That's right.
You go ahead and cut that off, and then you can do the other two.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Set up for you. Everything is done. So all you have to do. Any stuff you may have to change.
Da-da-da-da. Jerry Ellsworth, will you please come up?
So first I'm going to start off and kind of give you a little background on myself. Folks have told me that I'm kind of unique, and I think that comes from my unique background. It starts with my father, who is probably my most influential mentor. And my talk's going to be a lot about mentors and how ham radio operators were my mentors and other very interesting mentors. But 2 years ago, at this conference, came here, did my all three tests in one shot, went straight to extra. It was super fun. Yeah. So forever, forever, I will have a warm, fuzzy spot in my heart for Pacificon. Yay! Yeah. And I've been learning a lot about ham radio, too, in the last several years as well. And I think it's really neat, and it's really humbling to think all my I didn't want to get emotional. All of the Elmers that helped me out when I was a kid, they're silent keys now. They don't even realize, they never realize that they set in motion me being a ham 20 years later, right? And I think about that a lot, like what we can all do as ham radio operators, kind of giving that nudge to the youth and our friends, and that it plants the seeds and someday that they'll be ham radio operators or engineers. You know, what can happen with my YouTube channel? Like some random kid might stumble onto it and see something that inspires them. So I think in closing, I think you're not always going to see the fruits of your efforts, but it's so worth it. Trust me. I could have never been, you know, an engineer. I could have never worked on rockets. Could have never been a prankster on the phone. You know, without, you know, guidance from ham radio operators and other mentors along the way. So, yeah. With that, I think I'm going to wrap it up.
And thanks for getting that together, Randy. And I understand he's got the full form posted there on his YouTube channel. And Jerry, yeah, you know, What a great person there and friend and now a ham. So glad she finally got into the hobby here. And I've got one other video tonight. It's from Dan, N9LVS, and you've seen Dan here a lot before. He's been putting a mixer in his shack and gives us a little update on that tonight and, you know, why he decided he wanted to use a mixer.
This video we've titled Behringer 1204 USB, adding a mixer to a ham shack. Now the average ham shack looks a lot like this. Clamshell microphones everywhere. And heaven forbid anybody ever call you, because you'll spend 20 minutes trying to figure out which microphone to grab. That's the main reason that I added a mixer to my ham shack. And this is the way the mixer looks today. I have microphone audio, I've got three radios, and I've got my computer coming back into the mixer. Now, you might be saying that that's a lot of knobs, buttons, and switches, and I really don't want to deal with that. So let's break it down. These are the basic channels coming into the mixer. You'll see we have a microphone input, a line input, an input level control, a compressor, a small three-band equalizer, an auxiliary or monitor send, an FX send, a pan control, a mute button, and a main volume control. That's all for just one channel. So let's say that we plug a microphone into the microphone input. Where do we go from there? First of all, we'll adjust the gain control about halfway. Don't worry about the compressor at this time. I take all my equalizer controls to start with, and I just put them straight up and down. The aux monitor, in my case, that's going to become the audio that I hear, so I put that straight up and down as well. We're going to be using the FX as well, so I'll put that straight up as well as the pan control, and I make sure that the mute button is turned off. The stereo input controls work virtually the same. We do have a cut switch, and in my case, I think 10 dB down works fine. All the other controls are virtually identical to the microphone. There is repetition in numbers. Everything else stays the same. However, the FX control I put to zero. So let's look at the output controls. This is the output section of the mixer. We have an aux send monitor, and we have an FX send. Both those controls go up about halfway. Then we have the main audio. In my case, the main audio output is actually going to go back to the computer, whereas the monitor control goes to a little Behringer MA400 headphone amplifier. I don't want to use the headphone out of the mixer because it's the same as the master output. And the FX actually goes to the mic input of all three radios. That little breakout box I'll explain in another video. So now, how do I have this all set up? Very simply, channel 1 is my microphone. Channels 2, 3, and 4 are the HF radios and a VHF-UHF radio. The next input is actually coming from my computer, and the last put at this time is unused. Just above line input 7 and 8 is the auxiliary send or monitor and the FX send. Again, the auxiliary send monitor is going to a Behringer MA400 amplifier, which basically can take monitor input and put it to stereo headphones. The FX is going to all the radios. The main reason that I'm using the FX send to go to the radios, because it's working in conjunction with the main volume control. That way, if you need to adjust the volume, you can just do it off the main slider, and it will automatically adjust the FX control. You might ask, how does that work? And that's going to be in another video. But suffice, the way that basically works is I use a foot switch on the floor and a switch box that selects which radio is going to be the PTT. The audio back to the computer is actually done through USB. That's all there's to setting up a mixer to a ham shack. I hope this video has been helpful. 73 from N9LVS.
And thanks for that, Dan. And Dan's got more videos in the can that we'll be looking for in the future here. Last week we talked a little bit about a DIN connector, and I asked a question, who standardized the DIN connector? Well, you know, for years I thought it was some Danish institute or something. I knew it was European. But who did it? Well, Jim W3ERQ knew the answer. And he said it's the Deutsches Institut für Normung or something like that. It's actually a German Standards Institute. And congratulations, Jim. We're going to be sending you one of these MFJ Guardian Angel Surge suppressors. Put it on your coax between your radio and your antenna. Connect a ground to it. You've got a gas surge suppression here that helps keep static and possibly lightning damage out of your radio. Great little device to add a little extra protection in your ham shack. Thanks, MFJ, for making that available. For next week, well, I've got another question. You know, we looked at that tube that I had a little bit earlier, that 4CX15000A. I want to know what the rated filament voltage is for that tube. If you know it, and I want to know if it's AC or DC as well, send your answer to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might win a copy of Gary Drash's great book here, Ham Radio is Alive and Well. Gary was out of the hobby for a number of years, came back, caught up with what's going on now, and explains it all right here in the book. So hamnationcontest@gmail.com. Tell me what is the rated filament voltage of a 4CX15000A tube. And we'll be back in just a moment, but first let's get a message from ICOM.
Heard it, worked it, logged it. It's time to get the transceiver that's best suited for your lifestyle. ICOM offers a variety of high-performance and innovative products. See how you can make the most out of contest season with these transceivers. The competitive edge you've been looking for, raise the bar and hear what others cannot with this flagship HF 50 MHz transceiver, the IC7851. Reciprocal mixing dynamic range, crystal clear local oscillator design, spectrum scope, dual receivers, and digital voice recorder. The IC7610 is the SDR every ham wants and just in time for contesting season. This high-performance SDR has the ability to pick out the faintest signals even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF direct sampling, 110 RMDR, independent dual receiver, dual digicell. IC7300 is changing the way entry-level HF is designed. This high-performance innovative HF transceiver with a compact design will far exceed your expectations. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win. After each episode of Ham Nation, go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. Register to win for some great swag prizes. We've got T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you can win the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For October, it's the ICOM IC2730A dual band, dual watch, analog transceiver. 50 watts on both VHF, UHF. It's got a large high contrast LCD display. Built-in weather alert function, and it's very easy to operate. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation after this in each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And now, Don, what is going on this week?
I don't know. Let's go to the videotape and find out. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2138, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, October 24th, 2018. The ISS will be losing its current crew soon, and there's no replacement team in place.
The failure of a recent Russian rocket after launch to the International Space Station has led to a delay in replacing its current crew. The three current residents of the station are fine and have plenty of supplies, and the crew that was aboard the aborted rocket has been recovered and they are fine as well. But the possibility of leaving the space station unmanned for a period of time is now creating a lot of questions. The current crew was scheduled to remain on the International Space Station until mid-December. The Soyuz capsule that will return them to Earth has a limited lifespan, which could force an evacuation by early January. While the Russians are evaluating what went wrong and when a safe relaunch of the crew could proceed, the possibility of orbiting without a crew is looming. For us as hams, this means that amateur radio operations on the ISS could be impacted in the future. Ken Ransom, N5HVO, the ARIS project coordinator, at this time could only say that, quote, current operations will continue using our normal process. We are still trying to determine the long-term impacts of not having the new crew on board the ISS, end quote. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
The Pacific Islands De-Expedition Group said yes to an activation of the Kure Atoll in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, but federal officials have said no to the group's plans.
Hams who were hoping to conduct a de-expedition from the Kure Atoll and hams who were hoping to work them have received disappointing news. The Pacific Islands De-Expedition Group, which had set its sights on operating from this coveted DXCC entity, cannot go forward with its plans. The Hawaii Department of Land and Natural Resources has denied the application for an amateur radio permit there, citing the belief that vertical structures, such as an antenna, poses a hazard for birds who might strike it. The De-Expedition Group posted a notice in the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin that a formal denial was received from officials in Hawaii, stating that the radio operations did not guarantee, and I quote, adequate safeguards for the resources and ecological integrity of the atoll, end quote. The DX group maintains there have never been any documented examples of negative impact on the atoll from radio operations, but also notes there is no appeal process available. The group has posted a notice in the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin asking DXs to contact Hawaii's Department of Land and Natural Resources in Honolulu by sending their QSL card along with a request that officials reconsider the matter. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
Newsline's Paul Brown, WD9GCO, has an update on amateur radio and the relief efforts following Hurricane Michael.
Hurricane Michael is the most recent storm to have had ARES chapters deploying into the field to help with disaster communications. I spoke with Bud Siner, KA3OGG, about the Nassau County ARES chapter's current deployment in the Florida Panhandle. Siner said they staff the county watch office 5 days a week and are regularly embedded with the police and emergency agencies. They have been deployed for over a week now.
We got activated. We went to 24/7 operation on Tuesday day, and we had about six of us monitoring through the storm, and we had another 10 people out in the, around the county that were sending in damage and weather reports. Thursday, we got a direction that we were going to deploy a couple of teams. The emergency management deployed one 20-man team with our emergency manager to the Panhandle region.
According to Siner, NCARES has two well-equipped MCOM vans with multiple radio and satellite setups, has one member who is with the sheriff's office, and all are treated as Nassau County employees when on deployment. As of the time Newsline went to production, they were expected to be in the field until at least October 26th, depending on recovery efforts.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Graham Kemp, VK4BB, Paul Brown, WD9GCO, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. All right, good stuff from the Newsline crew. We don't have any update tonight from Dr. T. She apparently was extremely busy, didn't have a chance to get back to me or prepare anything at all for us. So just make sure you follow her on Twitter, and she'll keep you up to date. Also, spaceweatherwoman.com is her website, so make sure you check that out as well. And right now, let's check out and see what's going on in the chat room with Amanda.
Well, good evening. It's just the three of us, the three stooges. I'm so excited.
Tweedledum, Tweedledummer, and hello.
Hi. Okay. I got an opinion about the Curry Island thing. I hope it's I'm allowed to have an opinion. I think that's weird that they would ask everyone to send a QSL card and like royally tick off the people in the office. Like if they get thousands of those QSL cards, do you think that's going to change their mind? What do you think, Don?
I don't know. You know, it's like any other letter writing campaign, only in this case, they're asking us to send QSL cards to, you know, highlight the ham radio aspect of it. So I don't know. It's like any other letter writing campaign.
I suppose. I just thought it was odd. Okay, let's get to some real questions here once I can pull my screen up. Sorry about that. So we had a lively chat in the chat room tonight about antenna tuners. What's your take, George, on tuners? Good, bad, ugly, the way to go? What do you think?
Well, if you don't need one, don't use one. And you'd be better off with that. If your antenna's resonant, it's going to radiate the best. But I will say this, because I saw the debate in there as well, and yeah, avoid them if you can. You can't always, though. But I would say virtually every AM broadcast station on the air has a tuner. Now, there might be a few exceptions to that, but the majority of them do. It's not at the transmitter itself, though. It's not at the output of the transmitter. It's right at the base of the antenna, because usually those antennas aren't resonant on the exact frequency that station's on. So they'll have a little L network or a T network right at the base of the tower there just to do the matching. And you know, that's just the way that it works out. There are a few cases where they're using unipole antennas with the skirt wires around the outside that you might actually get it tuned and don't need some kind of matching, but you know, that's for broadcast use. For ham use, we can actually cut our antennas, make them the length that we need them to be resonant. But if you need a tuner, use it.
You know, of course, Bob Howe will tell you that every antenna should be a resonant dipole.
Resonant.
But that's not always practical. For me, I've got two off-center fed dipoles. I've got an 80 meter and a 160. So I use the antenna tuner in the radio, and it works just fine on those. It's a tool like anything else. If you need it, use it. And going back to what George was saying about the matching networks at the base of the broadcast towers. You haven't lived until you've walked into the doghouse of a 50,000 watt AM radio station while that thing is humming and feel that RF crawling on your skin. That is just the weirdest feeling in the world, which may explain why we had to adopt.
Yeah, they won't let us do that anymore, Don. They kind of outlawed, you know, hanging around at the base of a 50 kilowatt tower.
Doesn't WTWW give, you know, tours?
Yeah, but they don't have a tower. They've got wire antennas.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. KOMA in Oklahoma City, when I was there during the early 80s, we would do transmitter maintenance. And I was a jock. I was on the air, but I would go out and hang with the engineer. And we would sign it off about 2 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday night, early Monday morning, and you know, do tower or transmitter maintenance, whatever we needed to do. But we would walk out to the three-tower array in the backyard, and we would walk out there. And about halfway out there, we were carrying 6-foot fluorescent tubes. And about halfway out there, they would blink on. And we just hang them in the chain link fence and do whatever work needed to be done. But going into that doghouse with the size of the coil and the toroid in there. And of course, they interlocked like that. It was scary. You did not want to get close to it. With 50,000 watts humming through it. And it literally, you could feel it on your skin, which, like I said, could be why we had to adopt. You never know. Could explain a lot of other things, too.
And you can hear the station before you actually get there. You can hear it on the way walking to the doghouse. You can hear the audio playing.
Well, you know, WLW in Cincinnati, when they were at 500,000 watts, they had people on staff who did nothing but go around to the neighbors within like a mile radius or half mile radius and put sheet metal screws in their storm gutters to keep those things from resonating.
Okay, yeah. So somebody explain the doghouse to us non-knowers.
It's just a little shack at the bottom of the tower where the matching network is, and it's right literally at the bottom of the tower, and it's just called a doghouse.
Okay, so it's like your repeater building at the bottom of the tower, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, in most cases, it's not that big. It's just a little metal box. The official name is ATU, Antenna Tuning Unit, but doghouse is what we call it.
Yeah.
Okay. So going back to the tuner thing, I'm with Don. A lot of us are limited on the antennas that we can put up, and a lot of people can only put up one dipole, so it's probably not going to be resonant on every band. So you're going to have to use your antenna tuner, and that's just the way it is. We want to hope for the best, but just probably not going to happen. And again, it depends on, are you CW user? Are you SSB? Are you both? You're going to have to do some tuning in there, I'm pretty sure. So, Don't put down the tuners too much. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, one thing I didn't specify on that, but I kind of said it at the first when I said practically every AM broadcast station uses one and is right at the base of the tower. If you can get a remote tuner, they're a little more expensive, but if you can get a remote tuner that you put right out at the feed point to your antenna, that's going to work better for you than having the tuner right there at the transmitter output and then having to run through the coax to get to your antenna. It's not always practical, but, I mean, that is the best solution if you've got that option.
That is a sweet setup if you have the opportunity to do one of those, that's for sure. All right, I have one announcement to make. The Denver Tech Connect Radio Club's annual Fall Tech Fest is going to be taking place November 3rd in Lakewood, Colorado. I'll not be there. I'm doing a training here. It's called a Life Search or something, working with the sheriff's office where they people that are at risk, adults and stuff, dementia patients. If they wander off, they have this little bracelet. I'm learning how to do like basically the fox hunting to go out and find them and assist the sheriff's office with that. So kind of excited about that. It's going to be fun. Also, let's see. The DX contest is this weekend. That's the CQWWSSB contest. So I'm looking forward to that a little bit. We also have some nets tonight. We have 40-meter net on 7192. We have the 80-meter net on 3908. And our digital nets, EchoLink on Dewdrop In, D-Star, 14 Charlie, and I'm missing one here, DMR, TAC 311. So one other thing, I lost a really good friend this week who was a ham, into MED, John. He was 40, passed away suddenly. So his whole family is very distraught, as well as all of his friends here in Colorado. We love him very much, and we miss you, brother. And he was a really good guy and really helped out in Aries and was also a paramedic and other civil service duties. So, John, we miss you, buddy. And that's what I've got.
Yeah, it's sad when you lose one of your own, and especially at that age. So our hearts go out to you and of course all of his friends and family. So, George, that's pretty much all we have here from South Mississippi up to Jackson. To you, what's going on up there? Anything else?
No, that's about it, Don. Like I say, I've got a weekend project lined up to go put in that new rebuilt tube because we use rebuilts now. I can buy one of those tubes rebuilt for $1,873. I got a quote on just buying a brand new tube today. That's about $4,000. So, Yeah, right there.
What do those things weigh?
And I wish, you know, I hope eventually we'll get solid state to replace that because these rebuilds just aren't lasting anymore.
Yeah.
And
What's the weight on that? How much do those tubes weigh? They look. I know that's a ceramic base and it's all silver plated and everything. What do those things weigh?
Oh, gee. You know, I don't remember right off. I would say probably about 5 pounds.
Okay. I was thinking heavier, but that's okay. I don't know. It looks heavier.
Yeah, well, it could be 10 pounds. I'm not, you know, my weighting is not calibrated. So
yeah.
I'd have to look it up on the spec sheet to know. But anyway, that's what I've got going on here besides a little bit cooler weather heading our way here and a little wetter weather as well. So, Don, you going to wrap it up for us tonight?
I suppose I can. So for all of us here at Ham Nation, we thank you for being here because you're the reason why we spend our Wednesday nights with you. If you weren't here, we wouldn't be here. So we're glad you're here so we can be here or something like that. Anyway, so for all of us, to all of you, thanks for being here. And we'll see you next week here on Twit. Good night, everybody.